On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Insurance Journal, Carrier Management, and other fine publications. And today I'm really happy to be talking with George Woods, who's Senior Vice President of Guy Carpenter. George, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, George, we have a lot to dive into. We're going to be talking about some of the cool projects you have going on at Guy Carpenter, your observations of InsurTech around the industry, but also diversity. We want to get into a little bit of your take on diversity and inclusion initiatives in the insurance industry. I first met you a couple of years ago at an ACME meeting, Agents Council for Technology, which is part of the Big I. There was a conference at which you spoke, and it was a nice update on some of the things that are going on with technology in the insurance industry, a lot of interesting changes. But maybe you could start off by letting us in on a little bit about your career, yourself, and what brought you in the first place to Guy Carpenter.
Yeah, Peter, thanks. That's a good question. So I've been in a career over 25 plus years. I worked on the carrier side for a number of years, say 20 years out of my career, had different roles, field underwriting, marketing, sales, branch manager, for primary insurance as well as reinsurance, and then got recruited to go over to the distribution side, worked at Benfield, and then they got acquired by Aon, and then was a part of Aon Inpoint, which is insurance consulting, and then got recruited from Aon Inpoint to Guy Carpenter back in 2011. And when I was recruited, one reason why I was recruited was because of my experience working on both the carrier side as well as the broker side. But then my first day on board, Guy Carpenter had taken an equity stake in some startup technology companies, and my role was to initially come up with a joint go-to-market strategy for the tech company that we had invested in. So when you think about it, I probably was actually involved in InsurTech before it became InsurTech.
Okay, yeah. It's funny how we take on these names. I think actually financial technology or fintech was around about 10 years earlier than InsurTech. We were sort of a slow starter, at least for the, you know, the name InsurTech. But I think with you know, building upon the success of MedTech and FinTech, perhaps some of these outsiders thought, hey, you know, insurance is like the last frontier, you know. Maybe we should bring our expertise there, don't you think?
Yeah. I think initially what I saw was you had a number of tech firms, at least back then, that they saw insurance as being stodgy, conservative, behind from a technology standpoint, and basically ripe to be disrupted. And I think what a lot of the tech firms learned, and even some of the companies that we had invested in, one of the things we noticed was they had technological expertise, but no real insurance knowledge. And so I think one of the challenges that a number of tech firms realize is that's a highly regulated industry. It's not, for the most part, some aspects of it, but for the most part, it's not direct to consumer, like, for example, in banking. And because of those factors, it's not as easy to disrupt. So the trend that I've seen over the past few years is more along the lines of tech firms looking to partner with insurance carriers and become innovation solution providers instead of disruptors.
Okay, well, maybe you could walk us through, to the extent you're allowed to, I suppose, or want to, some things you have going on at Guy Carpenter, some projects, maybe some progress around technology. Your company is in a unique niche, and you have a unique lens on on the industry. So I think that's why it's kind of cool we're having this chat. But what can you tell us, maybe some big buckets of work that you deem important and any progress you're seeing in those areas?
Yeah, so I want to do this. So for example, with Guy Carpenter, we saw the insurtech space as being very important to a number of our clients, especially those clients that are, you know, mutual regional insurance carriers. You know, they don't have the size and scale of some of the larger global players where they can hire data scientists, they can create their own innovation labs or hubs. And so what we did in 2018 is we launched a wholly owned subsidiary called GC Genesis. And GC Genesis, you know, to basically give you an idea of what we're doing, is we're working with a number of our insurance carrier clients who, in many cases, they're going through some type of digital transformation, and we're helping them to, one, scan the insurtech landscape to see what solutions are out there, what solution providers are out there that can actually help them as they go through this digital transformation process. And so as a member, if a insurance carrier decides to become a member of this alliance, then each quarter we have a quarterly meeting. And during that quarterly meeting, the members select the topic that they want the quarterly meeting to focus on. And let's say, for example, we're doing a quarterly meeting in September, and it's going to focus on artificial intelligence. So during that session, we'll talk about how artificial intelligence is going to, or is possibly right now, starting to impact the insurance value chain, from the insurance sales to underwriting to claims, and then talk about what that artificial intelligence adoption journey could look like. So those are some of the things that I think that we're working on. It's very interesting.
Okay. So is it sort of like a consortium? Is this group investing in some technology, or is it more just a information sharing, networking kind of opportunity?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's more just an information network sharing opportunity. No collusion going on, of course.
So, of course. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of groups. I mean, if you look at the one you spoke at, ACT, it's the same kind of way. You know, but we learn a lot from each other while staying within the guardrails of antitrust. You know, there's a lot you could share. I mean, in a way, you guys are sort of the wholesalers of the information and how you're presenting it to them, right? I mean, our AIs would be just one topic.
That's right. Yeah, AI is one topic. Okay. I mean, we've talked about third-party data was another topic. We've talked about distribution. So whatever the members are interested in, that's what the session focuses on, which is great because it also gives us an opportunity to invite different technology companies that are out there that we find interesting, that for the most part also too, these tech firms have some traction in the industry, or in some cases maybe they have traction in another industry, but they just haven't realized that insurance would be a great area for them to focus on.
Okay. So I was speaking with Jennifer Byrne a few podcasts back, and she is all about raising the profile of InsurTech and FinTech, all women founders. And she was telling me that less than 3% of investment dollars, whether it's in private equity or venture capital or wherever, it's the total in the U.S. is less than 3% going to women founders, and I thought that was kind of odd. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if it was 30% or 40%, but 3% less just doesn't seem right to me. But then I started thinking maybe you and I could chat about what's a level investment with other just I mean, non-white startup leaders. Certainly, you've seen this if you've gone to the InsurTech Connect conferences, that there are people from all around the world, for sure, who are getting involved, all backgrounds, et cetera, getting involved in this industry that way with technology. But do you have any sense the level of diversity out there with people being willing to invest in startups?
Yeah, that's a good question, Peter. I don't. You know, in terms of hard numbers, it's all about what I've seen visually, and also to companies that I've actually interacted with. And I will have to say that in my journey over the past few years, when researching or meeting with different insurtechs, whether it be at a InsurTech Connect or a Global Insurance Accelerator, or even some of the accelerators that are out there, like Plug and Play, for example, I don't come across. It's a diverse group, but I can't tell you what the actual numbers are in terms of how much of that funding is actually going to, you know, people of color or women for that matter. I know it's rare. If, let's say, for example, with what you see in terms of the social unrest is taking place and social and racial injustice, where if I, let's say, I focused on African-American owners of insurtechs. In the past few years, I've only come across maybe three. And of those three, maybe there's one that I know for sure from having conversations that today is cash flow positive, but in terms of funding, what they explained to me, the way they got their funding wasn't necessarily through, you know, a private equity. It was more bootstrap and family and friends. So that question you asked is a very, very interesting one.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not qualified. I find myself, George, when it comes to diversity, being like way behind the eight ball in terms of even knowing what to ask. To be honest with you, I'm as much to blame as anybody, you know, in terms of just not really even thinking about it until this year. And so, even the term diversity, like when you think of that term, we think of diversity. D&I, as they're calling it now, be inclusive, all kinds of people, backgrounds, et cetera. But you know, it's the person, the people of color scenario. But when I was chatting with you to get ready for this podcast, you were encouraging people to think more broadly about diversity. And you know, it's like that question of like, okay, yes, we have an issue with people of color. Our industry needs to get better. We all know that. It has gotten better. It's been successful despite itself. But in terms of the future for investing in these new technologies, bringing in new talent, what do you think of when people say, okay, let's talk diversity? Like, what are some things that come to your mind?
Yeah. When I think of diversity, it's, well, first of all, let's think about how most people, I think of diversity. A lot of times when people hear the word diversity, and now it's more than just diversity and inclusion, it's diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because the pay equity issue that exists, right? So in my mind, I like to try and think beyond that. And what do I mean by that? Well, I think it's more than just gender. It's more than just ethnicity, race. You know, in some cases, it could be something as, in terms of education. You know, let's say Ivy League school versus a state school, or you know, someone grew up in a rural environment versus an urban environment, and or someone is a creative and someone is analytical. So when I think of diversity, I think there's so many things that come into play that you have to consider. you know, if you think about insurance companies today, or companies in the insurance industry in general, at one point in time, you would never think of the fact that they would hire data scientists, right? Well, look at what's happening now. And that, to me, is diversity of thought, diversity of skill set. So that's kind of my, you know, my initial thoughts about that, that there's so many aspects of diversity that I think we need to make sure that we think about, in addition to just the ones that are obvious based on physical appearance.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. It kind of broadens it to maybe, I don't know whether it's more, it's got to be more helpful, more useful to think about, like, because you can't become diverse if you're not intentionally thinking about these things, you know? I mean, you have to, it's one thing to think about it, it's another to actually put it into action and say, maybe we need more than lawyers and underwriters and actuaries kind of running the insurance industry. Who else could we bring in that has maybe some more transformational thought, you know, for us? You know, I guess that's not really a question, but maybe I should ask you, do you think the insurance industry has been improving? And secondly, you think, based upon the level of dialogue today, that it will be ramping up even more, even if it has improved somewhat?
Yeah, so my, you know, my these are my personal thoughts, of course, that I'm sharing. I think there's been improvement. I mean, since when I first started in the industry, I know there's been improvement. Now, is there still room for improvement? Absolutely. And what can that look like? Well, you know, to me, one of the things that can happen is, you know, how do we educate the population about insurance at an earlier age? How do we introduce insurance to a more diverse population early on? You know, because when you think about it, insurance has never had the best reputation. It's not like most people say, hey, you know, when I graduate, I want to get into the insurance field. I want to be an underwriter. I want to be the president CEO of an insurance company one day. You know, nowadays, a lot of the millennials that are graduating, they want to work for Google, Facebook. So how do we sort of begin to educate the population about the opportunities that exist? And how do we recruit where we're recruiting from? Instead of just recruiting risk management majors, we're recruiting people of all disciplines, of all the ethnicities, genders. And so, you know, those are some of the things that I think can be done. But once you recruit and you have this diverse workforce, then the other thing is the inclusion piece, right? It's how do I make sure that once I bring this talented, diverse group of people into my organization, how do I make sure that I make them feel included? How do I make sure that I put them in management, leadership training, development programs that lets them know that we appreciate the contributions they made to our organization? How do we make sure that when it comes to looking for senior leadership or executive leadership, that once again, we continue to have this diverse pool so that you can now say, you know, there's, you know, 30% of the CEOs of the insurance industry are women or persons of color, so forth and so on.
Yeah, George, can you talk a little more, too, about that equity piece you raised earlier?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't have the exact figures, but I recall where studies have shown where there's, you know, women making less money than men and having or holding the same roles or positions within organizations corporately. And so a number of companies have to start and take a look at pay equity piece. You know, are we paying men more than we're paying women or people of color in this industry? And so, you know, that's another piece that I think has to be viewed. And I wish I could quote the studies off the top of my head, articles I've read. You know, I don't have those handy, but, you know, there is an issue out there. And there are some companies that are trying to tackle it head on. And not necessarily in the insurance industry per se. I know in banking that the industry, there's some companies that have done that. I think at some point in time, I think Lloyd's was taking a look at that as well. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on going forward.
Yeah, okay. Well, even if you don't have the statistics right now, I got to believe that if companies talk about it and research it and think about their own situation, that's got to be a big help, right? Just to be aware of it, you know, and then you can deal with it later. But if you're not even asking the question, you know.
Right. Well, the thing about it, too, once they're aware of it, then, you know, how do you fix it? And then at what cost? And I think that's also, too, a big concern as well, right? When you identify this issue, this problem, you look at it, you analyze it, you come back and say, okay, well, here's what we found. Now, how much is it going to cost us to fix this issue?
Yeah. Okay. Well, is there anything, George, that you've seen? Is there any conversation you've had, even on a family or personal level, certainly the corporate level, where this kind of discussion has come up, and you felt like there was some really good. There was some really good dialogue. Are you seeing that change? Do you have any advice for how insurance organizations can open up to this? I mean, our listeners to the podcast are all from all walks of life around the industry. Retail agents all the way up to reinsurance companies. So everybody that's involved, thousands of people in our industry, hundreds of thousands, millions probably, just the P&C side alone, and is there anything you could share with us that we're, this awkwardness of not even knowing how to bring it up can be overcome and there be some good outcomes?
Yeah. Peter, that's a good question, because I think it's not an easy conversation to have. And I know lately, though, the conversations are taking place. I've probably been involved in a number of events, meetings, panels that I've been on where these conversations are taking place. How do we change? And change, everybody knows change doesn't happen overnight, but at least the conversations are starting. And, things such as, what I mentioned before, when you look at your organizations and you look at how you're presently recruiting, how do you change that? Because it starts there to a degree. Once you recruit the talent into your organization, who do you see getting promoted most of the time? Well, how do you change that as well? How do you put things in place internally? And then one of the things that I was thinking about too is, a lot of companies that I've seen that have spoken about some of the challenges that they've seen and the lack of diversity and inclusion and how they'd like to change, one of the things that you see is a lot of senior leaders, CEOs, are stepping up and speaking out. I think where sometimes it falls short is once it goes from the CEO and then down through the rest of the organization, that sometimes maybe in lower levels of management is not implemented. And to me, the question comes, well, why not? And then I'd have to say that possibly one of the things we have to think about is, how do we make sure that leaders and managers understand the importance. And just like, for example, you have P&L responsibility and you're rewarded based on your P&L results, well, how do you tie your D&I efforts to compensation? Or how do you make sure that your organization is showing that it's important, and that if not compensation, a person's performance evaluation is definitely tied to, you know, how well they're doing in this area also. So these are some of the things that I think are conversations that are taking place. Now it's just a matter of how do we implement and execute successfully.
Yeah, and how to do it where it's not just a thing. Like, I think I heard this term, maybe you and I were talking about it, but somebody used this term diversity theater. Like, it's a thing we talk about, and then, okay, this will blow over, we'll go back to doing our own thing, which is really bad, but it's like, let's have a show, you know, let's have a town hall, whatever, and we'll talk about it, but we're not really sure what we're going to do after that, except that everybody feels good about talking about it, which I don't mean to be dismissive. I'm just saying that this African-American lady in the insurance industry, actually with maybe one of your competitors, competitors, the guy Carpenter, raised this. She calls it diversity theater. And she's saying, we got to go past diversity theater. But I tell you, when people are now suddenly they're saying, oh, okay, the world has changed. It's much more diverse. Our company doesn't look like our customers. It doesn't look like our retail agent base anymore. We want to expand. We want to grow. We want to be profitable. All those things, but until it impacts me and my salary, my total comp, for example, maybe I'm not going to really have to do much. But now it's a whole other deal. Like, how diverse are we in our company and in our department? Maybe that's the answer, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a radical one, but it's one that, you know, I wonder, and maybe, you know, maybe in other industries there's some companies that are already doing that, but I would be curious to see if that's something that maybe companies in our industry will take a closer look at.
Yeah, because I know that there's some organizations already that tie, I mean, you have things like customer retention, profitability, net new revenue. You have all these metrics, you know. Mm-hmm. And the result of a diversity inclusion effort would be like, we want to have more of that good stuff. But the precursor to the good stuff are maybe some, you know, maybe less financial appearing things like how are we changing our hiring practices. So maybe there's a metric that says we reward people on things, all sorts of things like, How you're living the core values, you know, in this organization would be 10% of your comp, or maybe, you know, the comp that's more flexible that they give out. So maybe there's a way to tie the diversity initiatives to something like that.
Yeah, that's a thought. I mean, it's you know, to me, I think at this stage, so that we avoid I like that term, diversity theater, you know, how do we really take a closer look at things that will change how things are done and change it on a permanent basis going forward.
Okay, well, George, last question before I let you go is, as you look at what's happened with InsurTech, going back to that for a moment, in the insurance industry around 2020, which is about as bizarre a year as you could ever imagine or not imagine, as you look towards 2021 and some things you're seeing, the buzz out there, like, do you have any predictions, winners, losers, or not particular companies necessarily, but just categories, or what do you think, and what can we be expecting down the road? Because I'm imagining this has just been a huge interruption in the show, you know, the dance between the funders and the fundees and the insurance companies, the status quo and the newbies, you know?
Yeah. It, you know, what I find interesting is I was looking at a recent report where the funding is, you're still seeing money being invested in insurtechs, which I was amazed in comparison to last year. The funding hasn't really gone down. However, I think the investments are more strategic in terms of before, and I remember I wrote an article, and I actually for ACT, and I talked about how what I saw from an insurtech standpoint reminded me a lot of the dot-com era. But I would say what's happening now is instead of the funding going to early stage, Series A, Series B, I see the funding going more to your Series A, Series B, even C, as opposed to early stage. So I think that might be a trend that will continue where companies that have venture capital arms, private equity firms, they're going to invest their money in those companies that have traction. And I think that's going to continue. I think the early stage companies, companies looking for seed rounds, unless they have a solution that's really outstanding, that's really a game changer, I think it's going to be a challenge for new startups coming into the industry.
Yeah, one of the folks works at an MGA told me that, I'm sorry, program administrator, he said, he tells the insurtechs, come talk to me after the pivot. after your solution is fully vetted and you realize you were solving the wrong problem or your solution isn't good for the problem and so you're going to pivot. And so maybe that's, they learn a few things. So the money, you're saying, maybe going to those firms that have, more traction, to be serious here.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
They've
made that pivot already. Yes. That's exactly what – I mean, that's my observation. We'll see over time what happens, but that's what I found amazing in this COVID-19 environment where the funding is going.
Are you missing seeing people in all those conventions, George?
I do. I mean, I can only walk to Whole Foods for food and interact with the cashiers.
Yeah. I never thought I would say this, but I really do miss business travel, and I miss all the insurance conventions. I miss seeing people. It just seemed like a chore all the time, especially in the spring and fall. But when
That's
it was
right.
taken away, I really do miss. I miss the people. It's a great industry, isn't it?
It is. It's a great industry, great people. It'd be nice if you and I were doing this in person. And hopefully, I'm keeping my fingers, hopefully 2021 will be better and we'll be able to go back to that. Even though I think things have been changed forever to a degree, right? I think the virtual platform is more and more perfected. So maybe be a combination of in-person and virtual at the same time. But there's nothing better than, in my opinion, that face-to-face interaction.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. Well, George, thank you for your time. Thank you for your thoughts. I knew you'd be a good guest. Thank you. I'll stay in touch, and maybe we'll do a follow-up recording.
That sounds good, Peter. Thank you for the opportunity. Really appreciate it, and all the best to you.
Thank you, sir.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.